Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics and government, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Liz Neely, the curator of digital experience at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe. The museum is working on a series of projects to develop new ways of revealing connections between art, archival, and historic home collections to facilitate a broader exploration and study of Georgia O'Keeffe. These projects imagine access to collections through discovery, storytelling, and ultimately a digital catalog raisonné. Liz is a human-centered strategist focused on forming engaging experiences for museum audiences while designing sustainable organizational workflows.
Thank you so much for talking with us about the work that you've been doing and the work that you're planning to do. We were talking about where you are on the spectrum, where you've been working hard on digitizing art and then adding those digital objects to your database and describing them. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you approach description, because I found the descriptions very robust and helpful and interesting. When I was looking at clothes, for example, there would be information about the maker. That's how I learned that Georgia O'Keeffe owned Balenciaga clothes. She had fine taste. Sometimes the country of origin, you know, I learned about her Italian shoes, and then a physical description. I mean, it was all adding much more context to every single item.
Yeah, in our museum nerd world, that is called cataloging. That's actually a very important thing. When we're publishing something, that we do not impose our small world museum language and thought processes around general audience, because how you describe something is what's more important than how we think of it. And I wanted to give a huge shout out for people who are catalogers here, who describe the art. Our collection managers, our registrars, Judy Smith, Sherry Sorensen, and on our archive side, we have Ashley Barnack. I hope I'm saying her last name correctly. Head of Research Collections and Services, Liz Ernst, and then our Library Research Associate, Tori Dugan. And I want to give a shout out to all those people because their jobs have a heavy component around cataloging the works that come in. It's not only helping to preserve the artwork because we need to know where it is, what it is, and then the projects that we've been doing and that we do together to publish this is where we look at, are we describing things the same way? Are you calling a date the same way a date? Are you doing that? And so these teams have been cataloging things for years. And then when we looked at and worked together as a team, how do we publish this? How do we create connections? That's when we had to think about new workflows and how we do that and capture that in ways that communicate with one another. But it is a lot of work, and especially the descriptions. Sherry Sorensen is just a fantastic describer. And so when I need something, that's the little description text around what something is underneath that. When I need something described now, I go to Sherry and I say, help me. And just to further extend that is that one of the things that we're thinking about even more are visual descriptions. So we have another grant from the IMLS on DAI, so diversity, accessibility, equity, and inclusion. And we just had a team out here last week and did a workshop on how better to visually describe for those who have low or no vision. So that's an area that we're even thinking about how description can help make collections even more accessible. It's always been the work of a museum to make sure you know what you have and make sure you know where it is and what its condition is. And just like when shops went online, they had inventories. And then when you think about an inventory as being something in a store of how you're going to print that as an online store, you just have to think a little bit differently about it. But it really is the core of the work that they do. And we've really all thought together about how to best present that. And I think the projects that we have coming up, then are also looking at, well, what other information are you collecting and storing? And does that meet an audience need? So I often look at what they do as their work, such as keep track of exhibitions, keep track of what's in an exhibition, and they are already doing that. So it was one of the reasons why that's a need. We can present information that's not already out there that we have and connect it with archival collections. So it's always a back and forth.
I just wanted to back up to something that you threw out, and I won't get the term right, so you'll have to help me here. You said something about digital access and equity.
Yeah, there's an acronym around it that's often used, DEAI, or sometimes that's in different order. And so it's diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion. That particular project, and in general, the idea is about how do we make our museums more inclusive? How do we think about the varying stories around the materials that we have? So that can be about content. That can be about how a visitor of any kind is treated when they come into the museum, the services that we offer for people of differing abilities, how we approach that with online collections. So in a digital environment, is it visually described? Is the website accessible? Is the museum accessible? And things like that. So that's another project that is always something that we can always be better at, right? In any field. So we are looking at that here through this grant to see how we can be a more inclusive and welcoming museum on digital, in person, across the board.
Does that work fit in with what you were talking about with the envisioning of the catalog raisonné, where you can have multiple voices without impacting the authority of the catalog?
Yeah, I think it fits into the vision in a few different ways. It fits into the vision of how we're sharing collections. I think that one thing is when you looked at collections online, we present a variety of options and there is that description, but there's not a whole lot of interpretation. And in terms of a content strategy, I kind of think that if you put one interpretation there, then you're actually kind of like leaning towards there's one way to talk about a thing. Now, description is one thing, but one of the projects that we're working on, and this is funded by the TOMA Foundation, a digital changemaker grant, is then adding a storytelling tool layer. And you've asked me before, Ellen, about how we decide what projects to pursue. And this kind of comes out of, well, how do we tell stories, but how do we not embed the story as this story is the ultimate truth about this work? And also in the galleries, we have the need to kind of tell more stories, especially if something is an archival object in a vitrine and you can't get close to it. Capturing all those stories, but also having those connected to the artwork, connected to the archive. But that means that various different stories can be connected by various different authors so that we're presenting a variety of voices around the objects. And then as we look down the road at the digital catalog raisonné, taking that into that, there's not one story to tell. There's not one person to tell that story. How do we make sure that any story is authored so that you know where it's coming from, that it's not an institutional voice, that in a digital catalog raisonné, my dream is that you could have different attributed voices that are dated. So there's almost like a history embedded in it in and of itself. I think it's just a way that we're trying to think about everything now in terms of getting away from the word authoritative in all cases, thinking about, well, how do we deliver reliability, but also complexity? That is part of diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion. There's a lot of different ways that you can look at that. I think it's our responsibility that each of us as a professional thinks about how can everything I do become more inclusive in every way.
If it's okay, I'd like to tease something out there just a little bit more. So when you say reliability in this context, that's really things that might be related to provenance or location. This painting was painted in 1939, and it was sold to such and such a person. But on the storytelling side, could you give maybe, for the sake of our listeners, a concrete example? When you say that there are stories to be told, what does that actually look like?
Yeah, if you look at collections online and you can go down rabbit holes and you can kind of see how things are connected, But then some things aren't as obvious. So it can be pretty obvious if this thing is connected and it looks like a sketch of this. So that's probably a sketch of that. But let's say that we wanted to, beyond just showing a list of artworks, tell that story of the painting of the Black Place. So I brought this up before that we have paintings of this certain landscape that Georgia O'Keeffe used to go and she would camp there and she loved camping there. It's a geological wonder, this place, like the different kinds of rocks and everything. So you can tell a story about how she went camping there and what that meant and who was taking the pictures and what that means. What was that person's role in this? But you could also tell a story about the geology of the place. I guess what I'm getting at is that if you have one blurb or one kind of thing that's attached to that record, you can't tell the multiple stories. And where this gets to broader stories is that so the geology of the place could be a main topic of a story, or you could talk about, well, who have been the custodians of this land for the last 1,000, 2,000 years, and what does that mean now? And there are other stories about this place. You know, if you drive past this area, you will see a lot of oil wells. And so what is the future of this place? So I think that when you have authored stories that can have their own topics, they can be attached to that record and that theme, but you can actually get a little more into a topic than perhaps if you're telling one institutional story. Because that story about where will it be in 10 years, or what is the past of this, or should someone be camping on there? You know, you can actually get to deeper topics and maybe more difficult topics to talk about if you have different kinds of things. And you can draw upon the collection resources, you can draw upon the photographs, the paintings, which might be more relevant to some of those stories than others, but the letters about it, the other documents about these spaces or things like that. So I think that's what we're talking about, anchoring in collection objects, but being able to kind of look at them from a variety of viewpoints.
And I know we might be getting a little far afield here. Are you bringing in other people to sort of add to that descriptive material in these storytelling ways? You're not quite there yet?
We haven't gotten there yet, and I think that's a really good question. I'm building a framework for these things. I think the first kind of prototype story will be around historic exhibitions, since we're also building the exhibition archive through that same digital Changemaker grant from TOMA. And I think that in the digital catalog resume research, that we actually are just exploring. So I think it will be an exploration of how would you bring in other voices? What is the evaluation team of change and that kind of thing? Because some catalog resumes have secret evaluation teams because it is certifying work, which means that if you expose who people are, they could be influenced. If someone certifies a work to be a Monet, all of a sudden what you own is worth a lot more money than if it was by my cousin. So I think we're building the frameworks and talking about what those mechanisms. What I do know is that just from best practice principles, when we get there, everyone has to get paid for their work and the right amount of money. And there has to be a collaborative vision around how that is developed. Because if you go to someone and you're looking for a diverse perspective on something, you can't already know what that diverse perspective is. And I think this is where it's very interesting in terms of grants writing and grants evaluation. Many grants, if you don't know what you're going to write and you're not letting that up to the collaborative process, it is a knock against you in the grant. So I think this is something that I've had with a lot of grant makers and teams. We've kind of talked about like the conundrum of being more inclusive, because many grants that we write, if you don't have exactly what you're going to write and who's going to write it, it's a weakened grant. And that's why the current works that I'm doing are everything's kind of set in stone, which I hope that as we can move forward in the future, we can have things that are broad ideas, and then we can allow more room for a different voice to develop. I don't know if you all have experienced that in grants, if you think I'm on track.
That's Ellen's world more than mine.
You know, I think it depends on the agency, right? The granting agency and what they're willing to tolerate.
Yeah, but I think that's something that in terms of moving in this new direction and letting go of some control, or museums will have to find money in their budgets to do it and let go of control. And I think with good examples, it will help funding agencies see, and it would help also then explain, this is what we're going to do. We can't tell you exactly. So I've got a long way to go. We've got a long way to go. But really just having intentional frameworks to move in that direction.
Well, I love that you're pushing the envelope.
Liz, thank you so much for your enthusiasm and knowledge today.
Thank you.
And if you would like more information, you can visit the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum online at o'keeffemuseum.org. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.